Fuck.
Oh, cold open. We're back. Nice Dimebag last week. Guy won his he won his lawsuit. That's good news. For all you mofos. That is like, and even this episode is about us helping Humboldt growers stay alive. And last week was about helping you guys stay alive in Oregon. But we've been having fun.
Turns out it never stops. Even once you get legalized, you're done with the drug dealers, but then you still got to fight for your livelihood. And that's what we're here for. We're just going to showcase it. We're going to make sure to give voice to these people so that they get to hear about it.
It's like, you guys, keep fighting. We're gonna, yeah. I mean, you'll hear about the show we're doing in October in Redway at October 1st at the Mitchell Center. You'll hear about it in this episode. It's pretty dope. It's real dope. And by when this comes out, you will probably see the flyers, the actual flyers, not the soft opening on our Instagram. But we're bringing some dope friends to help our dope friends is what we're doing. And we were just in Philly last week. Mike bought some dope glass. We went down, was it South Street? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, South Street.
So we went down South Street, which is like Mike's nostalgic. It is like one of those streets in a city where you're like, as a kid, you were like, this, there's like vintage stuff, there's weird bars, there's vintage shops over here, there's like oddity stuff, there's a head shops, there's just, you know, weird food. It's like one of those where like this is culture, and I love everything about this street. And then they've got those head shops, like, you know, that are just commerce, where like it's just some factory blown. What who said is like, what did Jim Tuzar, one of the comics we were working with, he was like, is it like Pickle Rick bongs and stuff? I was like, that is such a good way to put. It's a good way to describe those type of stores where it's just like, is it Rick and Morty stuff? And you're like, yeah, it's, yeah, kind of, yeah, that stuff. And so Mike and I were like, nah. And it's like those cheap hookahs that are huge too. You know, everyone knows exactly what store I'm talking about. But there's a plethora of them. And then we stumbled into one where it just had the right brands on the stickers on there. Where Mike and I were like, huh. And then we
Oh,
walk
wait a
in.
second.
And it wasn't, it looked more like accessory. Like, 'cause the front part was just like, we were just like, it was just like, there was like torches over here and some Puffco stuff over here. And then, you know, rolling papers and all that junk everywhere. And I was like, huh. And then Mike is like, do you guys have any glass? And then they did that awesome thing where it was like, they were like, oh, back here. And then there was just this dope room full of art is what it was. It was
Yeah.
art. And I was like, I was overwhelmed immediately, where I was like, I don't. What I did, smartest move I did there was I was like, oh, I'm going to use this as goal setting, because there's some like heady stuff that I could spend some real money on, but I'm not going to. What I'm going to do is I'm going to motivate myself to sell out my Philly shows next year. We're going back to that shop. We sell out all those shows. I'm getting, you know, depending on how many shows and if we have to add any or how good it goes, you know, I might get two pieces. But I already said, I know, I already told Mike what my goals were. It's like, I'm going to get an Ill Delph. I've never seen one in person like that. And they're so thick.
They're big.
I understand every part of it now. I was, there was like always that missing piece where I was like, I'm not fully sold. And then when you see them in person, you're like, oh, it's really cool what they do. So I'm gonna get one of
Before
those.
you've said that bongs are like a shotgun and like Illadelph ones are like a cannon, is
It,
what it really
Illadelph
is.
is fa it is that's a howitzer is what that is. That is good God. It's what they put on an A-10. It's just Illadelph. If everything else is a shotgun, that's just, they've got Illadelphs on the A-10 Warthog. So that's, you guys got to help me and Mike sell out our shows next time in Philly. We're not coming back during Labor Day weekend. That was a mistake. We learned our it was a lovely weekend, but not for
lovely.
Not for drawing a crowd. That was on us. And I'm going to the if we sell them all out, I'm also going we're gonna go get the Illadelph bong and we're gonna use it. And then we're gonna go to the Mitchell and Ness flagship store. I walked in it for 5 minutes. I was like, get out of here. You got to get out of here. It was awesome. Because it was everything you want. If, like, if you don't know what Mitchell & Ness is, it's like the coolest jerseys and jackets. And they do old school and they cross over and do all this cool shit. And some of it looks ridiculous, you know, because it is. And then some of it's just awesome. But there was also, I told Michael, there was like Philly dudes in there having a Philly day. And then the Kelly Green, those uniforms are coming back for the Eagles. So just in there for 5 minutes, I was just like, I was just over it. I was like, this is, and people were like, do we have this in the back? And I was like, and like Mike was like, was it people you've heard of? I was like, never, none of the jerseys. And you're like, yeah, it's probably some cornerback that we played for us for 3 years. And I was like, God, I love that even more. I mean, there was like an old man in a wheelchair who was like dripping in his gear. And I was like, he looked so happy. And I was like, I bet he's been to everything. But I didn't have time to go in to have coffee at this dope. Philly's awesome. That's all I have to say. I don't know how the weed was because we brought our own and we were more than fine. We had a good week. I'm talking a lot because if I don't, Mike will just, he'll get nostalgic. He had it to him a time I met a lot of his family. It was, we saw Duff. Duff came out to the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to come on back on the show and give us some updates. Some of them are still working. I love him so much. And like, totally, I mean, there's a certain energy he puts out that you wouldn't want to be on the receiving end sometimes. But like, also just the most lovely motherfucker to hang. You know what I mean? Where you're just like, yeah, I see. But, you know, I'm a hillbilly, so I also understand, like, yeah, there's everyone's got a line, you know, and sometimes when you cross it, that's when weird stuff happens, and that's just how life is. So that's why I'm comfortable around many types of people, and especially people that are of a little different, but they're fighting the right battles, but the way they do it's weird. I love that. That's who
they're
we're
on your
with.
Side. They're on your side.
That's who we're talking to this week. Mike, do it.
You never told me your name.
No, you saw it on the thing.
I didn't write that down. What's her name?
I can't edit this.
Send it to me. I'll edit it then. I was like, I can
enjoy the episode, everyone.
Relax. Those beats mean you're now listening to the very real people and places that supply your high. This is Grown Local with Billy Wayne Davis and Mike McGowan.
Recording like 80 farmer booths.
What is it called again?
Cannafest.
So it is the first outdoor City of Eureka sanctioned open consumption event post legalization.
Whoa, that's awesome. Where's it going to be at?
In Eureka. She just literally said that.
I meant where in Eureka?
Where in Eureka? At Halverston Park. So right on the bay.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, yeah. I mean, everything in Humboldt County has always kind of been open consumption, I do believe, if we're being honest.
Yeah, yes and no.
I understand. Yeah. I totally. It is. It's one of those places. Humboldt's one of those places where you go and you're like, well, I guess if everyone's doing whatever they want, it is hard to enforce some of the laws.
Right. And, you know, once legalization happened and local governments were given a choice in how they wanted to regulate, some local governments said no. And actually started cracking down more in like the post Prop 64 adult use legalization than it was the prior 20 years of Prop 215 compassionate use.
Why? So,
I don't know.
Okay.
Really don't. I don't know.
I mean, we've talked about it here before the last couple of times when we were down in Humboldt and we were in Fortuna. Is that that's the name, right?
A friendly city.
Yeah.
And it was
so stark. It was so stark how there was just no cannabis there whatsoever in that little microcosm. And I was like, what's going on here? Why are they doing this?
Yeah, so that area still is a prohibition zone. So they are a little circle of no in the county.
But here's what I find interesting always. They have no problem with the taxes and all that stuff that they use from the county. It is like, and I'm not saying all religious people, but there is a certain type of religious person that I do think populates that area. And it is, we say one thing outwardly, and then we practice another without, you know, and then we act holier than thou. And to do it with cannabis in Humboldt County is like one of those things where you're like, you can't even be mad. You just kind of have to giggle at them. Like, okay, it's that. Okay, sure. What it. And now, I mean, the reason you're here to talk to us, and I'm good at transitions, is, and I know you're super busy. Like right before I hit record, she's like, I'm on 3 calls right now. And I was like, we're sorry. We were 2 minutes late. And look at him. He's in a sea of weed. He's doing okay. Good to get. We got him here. So, we're doing a big shindig at the Mateel Center, Sunday, October 1st. Sonny's going to have those flyers this evening. So I will send those as soon as I get them for you. And when I heard about this, I just kind of saw a couple things on Instagram from some of the people I followed from SoHome. And then I was like, yo. And then John Casale was like, it's bad, dude. It could, if it goes through, it just wipes us out. Like all these people that you've met that aren't criminals, I'm like, well, that's just, there's no reason. So let everyone know. And I was like, I can get loud about it. I will, like a good game of telephone, I will get the information out there, but it will not be probably the best. So we were like, let's get the pro on here and just take over. Tell us everything we need to know and all our Humboldt listeners who need to know, because that's who we're trying to get a hold of, is our Humboldt County listeners. And we have more than our fair share because we love them. And, you know, they got time to listen. So, shoot, tell them what we need to do. And this time you guys need to go vote. It's not like a presidency where it doesn't actually matter, except for, you know, picking the worst or the better of the worst ones. You know what I mean? That's how presidency works. But this, you might actually have to go vote and maybe a couple times. So,
exactly. So what we're talking about was known as the Humboldt Cannabis Reform Initiative, the HCRI. This is a voter initiative that is going to voters on March 5th, 2024. So everybody in Humboldt County is going to cast a vote, either yes or no. The HCRI was recently lettered by the county. So now it is called Measure A. So we're beginning this transition from calling it the HCRI to Measure A. And really working to spread the word of, you know, what is this? So first off, this was not created by our government. Some people, when I hear this, they're like, oh, the government's always after us. I'm like, no, this didn't come from the government. The government in Humboldt County has been relatively supportive of the legalization movement in the county over the last 8 years. We had one of the first land use ordinances in the state. We have a relatively supportive and respectful sheriff and district attorney that really wanted to see the transition from unregulated compassionate use Prop 215 cannabis cultivation to regulated permitted and licensed operations. And, you know, this didn't all just happen when Prop 64 passed. Our county started this process back in 2015. So what the county has built works. And when I say it works, it means this county has managed to move 775 businesses from mostly what we were like outlaw grows to legal, permitted, and licensed cannabis farms. And so like, that's not to be taken lightly. So we've done a really good job and we're so close to the finish line. And when I say finish line, like Humboldt has more permitted and licensed farms than any other place in the state, which is like, it's good. We've done the work. Now, what that means though, is this citizen initiative, which was brought forward by a very small group of people, three retired landowners in one corner of our county. I don't want to call it a neighborhood. We call it the neighbor woods. We're frustrated. There was a new operation that was proposed in their neighborhood. They didn't like it. They didn't feel that they had any say about this and it got approved. They decided to then go out and hire this law firm called Shute, Mahaley & Weinberg, which is a big San Francisco law firm. But this law firm also has had and taken on clients in Calaveras County, Sonoma County, and Half Moon Bay that were very strong prohibitionist clients. The Calaveras neighborhoods against marijuana planting. I mean, it was as reefer madness as possible. And Shute Mahaley worked for them and represented them.
Well, I mean, let's just say that you're an attorney and you're like, oh, these people have a lot of money and they want us to fight a battle we're probably going to lose mostly because of the way that the world is working, but sure, we'll take your night.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so, you know, these, frankly, it's two people. So
I'm just explaining how this can happen very easily. Is I'm not defending any of it. I'm just explaining where people sometimes are like, what in the hell? Why? And I'm like, oh, that is just, that's just two bags of money walking into the lawyer's office in San Francisco. Yeah. They're like, sure, we'll take it.
These two neighbors have spent $55,000 with this law firm.
Oof.
To enact their will. So this law firm then drafted this 38-page document at the behest of their clients. You know, if I'm being really generous, I will give the benefit of the doubt to the clients, the proponents, that maybe they were not trying to screw us over. Maybe their intentions were pure. However, the words on the paper matter. The literal reading of the words on the paper, this isn't a marketing document. These are legal documents that have to be followed. And words like may, shall, punctuation matter. Like, these are really minute details, but these things are fundamentally important because they change how these legal operations are managed.
And the way people can interpret them and enforce these laws and or not enforce them. And yeah, it does
Yeah.
It's and so, one like, punctuation changing people's entire livelihoods, something that they've been doing for generations and generations.
Well, it's that's not just this industry. That is how this country works. That is why you have to go get a lawyer or form a PAC. It is why you have to throw benefit shows, because some of these law firms are just really great at one thing. And then you just give them enough money. And it's like when I realized my friend in law school at the time when I was in my early 20s, I was like, oh, you assholes just learn a different language and then charge everybody a bunch of money just because you guys speak it. And he was like, yep, that is. He's like, I'm not even going to argue with you. That is exactly what I'm fucking doing. I was like, well, tip of the hat. All right. So it's, and I think I say all this to say, you can't get mad at it. It's the way it is. You can get mad at it. It's wasted energy. We just have to focus on, like, this is how we stop it. This is how we make this lady and this family lose $55,000. It's like, okay, we just bring a bunch of fucking good timing stoners together and get the word out about this, and then everyone goes to the thing and goes, no. So
right. And so, you know, just to kind of keep going backwards a little bit, these proponents are cute little old people. You know, they're sitting in front of the grocery store and they're holding up signs saying, like, help us protect small farmers, help keep corporate cannabis out of Humboldt. And those are good marketing phrases. And so they managed to secure 7,000 signatures from members of the public, including legal farmers. They're like, yeah, you know, I want to protect me. I don't want any more new big grows. And so people were misled by these people. And you know, it's challenging because the title of this initiative is called the Large Scale Cannabis Cultivation Restriction Initiative. And it is going to be hard to educate the public, you know, because again, most people, if you just read that, large scale cannabis cultivation restriction, that means no more big weed. That's what that translates. So if you're dealing with just an average voter who doesn't open up or go past that on the ballot, they're going to check the box yes. So we really need a lot of resources to come together to be able to build the coalitions, run the campaign, and educate the public so that when they see that, they know that's a trick. That's a trick. That actually means harm. Real farms, real people, real families, our economy, the environment, everything, because it's a trick. And that is that's what happens in politics. You know, you put something forward that you know people are going to like, even though what it actually is undermining everything else. So it's hard to combat misinformation.
I mean, is there any chance, you know, assuming that these are two old ladies, that it's just like my grandmom not understanding how to use the internet, where they're like, we want to do something good. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, you're actually going to destroy all these small farms and everything.
No, I think they've been told probably several times of what they're doing right now. I think at this point they know what they're doing. Sorry, Mike. I just know enough about how politics and all this works is you don't accidentally push a fucking measure through. It's not, you know exactly what you're doing. You know the language. And then you've probably got vested interests somewhere deeper than everyone realizes, or, you know, it just pops up somewhere. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, when there's no real motivation, you're like, there is, and you just got to find it. I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but I'm just saying usually there is. If you can't see a clear motivation, you just have to find the unclear one.
It's power. It's power, and they want to leave a legacy. And they don't want to do that. They want to lock this in stone, and they've been very clear about this. They don't want to leave this in such a way that it could be undone by the legislature in the future. And so what that says to me is they want to take away, like, I'm not that old, right? I'm not that old. They are much older. So they want to lock this in stone well past their time here on earth and take that right away from us to be able to engage our future.
Because they know a little better, and I got some money.
They know better. And so they're both also former professors. So they are the smartest people in the room. They know better. And they are
professors of what?
One is a sociology professor. One's a veterinarian.
So they're not farmers, either of them. Neither of them are farmers. Those aren't.
No.
Now listen, sociology, and I am a comedian.
They're saving us from ourselves.
It is. I had some issues with some professors similar to this. Not sociology professors. I like them, but there becomes this, well, you can't tell me what to do. And that sounds like, and I know these things and I have this time, but we can stop them. And that's what we have to do. So we are, good Lord. I mean, it's exhausting. To have it come from inside Humboldt after all these years, it's just truly, truly just maddening. Is because the sheriff's cool. We've kind of watched and studied him. Like, we were like, let's see about this dude. And they were like, he's pretty transparent and just been like, hey, this seems to be pretty good for this county, so we're just going to make sure it's done the right way. And you're like, yeah. And he's like, and it's a big county, so stop killing each other. Could you do that? Could you just chill? And I was like, that's hillbilly shit. That ain't going to stop.
This county suffered a big stain of embarrassment with that Netflix special, Murder Mountain.
Yes.
And no one here wants to be known for that. And when our people go and travel to other parts of the state and they're like, oh my God, we saw that show. Is it safe there? And so the public, the outside of Humboldt's perception of how we are here is very much colored by that documentary. And that documentary showed something that was true. Pre-legalization, there were a lot of, pre-regulation, there were a lot of issues. And I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like, there were issues, social, economic, social, environmental, criminal, all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's been covered on this website, on this podcast. When we interviewed all you guys are very open. I'm like, listen, it's good now. There were times totally, totally insane. And then
we moved, like, the whole point was to move past that. And I remember when those filmmakers were up here in 2016, 2017, and they said, okay, what we're doing is we're going to make this stuff and it's going to be about, like, the transition of legalization. And then they got wind of this other story and they're like, that's way more fun. Let's talk about this unsolved mystery. But, that is a good reminder of what we've moved past from. And, in this county, it was estimated that there were 15,000 grow sites as of 2015. September 2023, we have 775 legal farms. And I just spoke with the sheriff. We have fewer than 1,000 unregulated farms.
Whoa.
1,700. So, like, just some simple math, 1,700 divided by 15,000, we've had almost a 90% reduction in weed growing here in this county in 8 years.
And then they're trying to put the nail in the coffin and push the rest of the people
out. But it's like, what is that? it's such a part of the culture there. And it's like, you're just going to create more criminals again when you do that. Because here's the shit of it is like, it's not, they don't do it because it's, they're outlaws or any of that shit. There's better drugs to buy and sell and make money off of if you're trying to be a goddamn criminal. If that's your whole thing. These people love this lifestyle. And they love this plant in a way that most, and not most, like people in the industry love the plant just as much as in different ways. But there is a back to the earth, which is what the whole movement was started with. But there is a back to the plant part of this culture that like needs to be protected from a, like you say, environmental ecological standpoint. I think it needs to be protected and studied. The way y'all have grown and the way you've developed genetics is special, and it's outdoors in a way that most people couldn't do it outdoors. So that's special. And then on that old growth forest around is also super special. And you guys protect that land in a way, it's like you're elves in this magical world. And you're like, no, this is our world and we protect it. And it is, it's, and I know that I sound like kind of preachy about it, but it's special to me when I really think about it. And that's why I guess spend this time and energy trying to help when, I don't get much out of the, it makes me feel good because I love the plant so much. My wife is like, why do you do this? I was like, it's just special. What they're doing is special. And the thing is special. The material is special. So I'm bringing special people up there, you guys. But mostly so you guys can be entertained to show our appreciation who I'm bringing up. And then like I'm bringing Henry and Ben from last podcast on the left. That'll be the two people seem excited about that. I get it. They're my friend. I've known them for a long time. So we used to be in basements doing weird stuff together in New York City. And now I'm like, I can get Henry and Ben. People like their eyes get big. I'm like, okay. But I'm so thankful they're coming. They are big stars now and it's awesome. I'm very happy for their success. And then, so when we do that, we're going to do a show. And we anticipate a lot of people will come out of the hollers to see who they've been, who've been in their ears for years. And then I'm going to preach to them when they get there. They don't know that I'm hosting. I'm like going to yell at them at first and be like, you motherfuckers, here's what we have to do. You have to stop this. You have to go register to vote. Even if you've been a criminal, you still do it. It's fine. They already have your goddamn fingerprints. It's fine. It's, they know where you live. It's fine at this point. And they're not coming to get you. No one's going out to your holler to get you. Just come vote.
Don't get called for jury duty. Don't worry.
And listen, you don't have to go. I learned that this year. I forgot and called and Lay's like, yeah, it's fine. They just said no. I was like, I understand why you don't advertise that. But it's awesome. I was like, I'm not wanted. She's like, no, it's fine. I was like, okay. I like signed up for it. I just forgot. She's like, it's fine. So you won't like, even if you can be like, hey, I was doing stuff. They're like, whatever. Yeah. So just go. That is funny. People are like, I don't want to go to jury. Also, yeah, you kind of do in Humboldt. I bet the damn trials in Humboldt are hilarious. I bet they're amazing. Like, so that's a fun day off the farm, just hearing about, and then this meth head said to this meth head, and you're like, this is good. So what is like, when is the vote? So people that don't come to the show, so we can get all that information out. So what they need to do to stop this shit and stop these old ladies,
It's the vote is on March 5th. Everybody needs to make sure that they're registered to vote. Make sure you're registered to vote. If you've had an address change or a name change, you need to check that. I don't have the website URL up at this moment, but I'll find it.
You can't use your alias. It has to be your name.
You have to use like a legitimate physical address, not just a PO box, but like it's, They're like, if you live under a bridge, like, that's okay. You just need to say, like, a physical thing.
Yeah, you can say, like, a 101 in Garberville. Like the
You can. Yeah. You're allowed to say that. So, but, you know, people need to make sure they're registered to vote. They need to, and everybody now has ballots or mail to their address, their whatever their mailing address is. So, you know, you don't need to show up to your precinct poll on Tuesday during work, like in the middle of your work day. It's like your ballot will get mailed in the beginning of February. Get it. Check the box. No. Send it back. No postage necessary. Like, even if you don't want to have done anything else, because there's usually a long thing of stuff that we don't always understand, just check that box, send the rest back.
They've been mailing weed for a long time, so they understand how to use the mail.
That's true. That is very true. That's it. Like, you guys get this. You've been training for this, you guys.
I was at a bar that's next door to the post office in Eureka, and they were loading stuff into the back of the van. And I'm like, who's smoking weed around here? And I was like, it's all in the fucking postal truck.
Yeah. And they know.
They do. I was like, huh.
That is,
they don't want to mess with that government pension in order to open up some boxes. They're like, it's fine, you guys. It's
like, dude, right. Don't like what you're supposed to, like, put that shit in like coffee beans or something.
Not
like
in Humboldt. I think everyone's in on it. I think everyone's like, I don't know which box do we pick. I don't know which one it's coming out of. That is what's that old Mitch Hedberg joke? He's like, I like the FedEx driver because he's a drug dealer and he don't even know it.
Oh, I love that one. That's a good one. I was trying to quote that, but it was like somewhere deep in the back of my memory hole.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in all of this work? You seem like a very driven person who's doing this, and we're so thankful. Like, as a weed grower, we definitely need people like you.
You know, it's, I moved up to Humboldt 17 years ago to go to school. You know, but from being from San Diego, we got weed from Humboldt, came down. I always remember, like, why is there no weed, you know, late summer? And then it's like all of a sudden the weed came back. So we knew that the weed fairies came from Humboldt. I came up here, I really had no intention in getting involved in weed. But then there was a grow store everywhere. Like, and I frankly was like, oh my God, I'm not working and I'm going to school and this is expensive. And then I was like, oh, but I could probably grow some weed in my house and help subsidize what I'm doing. And so, like, went to the grow store with my little credit card and was like, let's go spend some money and buy some lights. You know, so I did like a really small micro indoor grow, which is, was pretty common in Arcata for those years. But you know, I came at this whole thing as like an environmentalist. I went to school for environmental policy and law, and really just wanted to, you know, idealistically, I was like, I'm going to help save the world. And I know I'm super opinionated and I want to help change people's minds. But you know, at that point in time, coming up through 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14 is really when some of the worst environmental stuff was happening. In 2010, California tried to legalize, it was, I think, Prop 19 back then. And even some of these governments in California were going to start regulating. And then there was a huge federal enforcement action from their, God, I don't even remember what her name is now, but, you know, came through these jurisdictions and are like, if you're trying to regulate weed, then you're complicit in federal, you know, controlled substances stuff. Mm-hmm. So all of these jurisdictions were like, well, I guess the best thing and the safest thing is just to put our head back in the sand and pretend like la, 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 nothing's happening. And so for 4 years, I mean, I would say that 2011 through 14, 15 is really when was the worst because there was, you couldn't enforce, it was so prolific everywhere that there's no potential of enforcement. And that's also when we had a lot of the environmental degradation, trespass grows, rat poison, cartel grows, all of this, you know, meanwhile, major droughts, fish kills, like all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it was a lot of people, it was, you know, the environmentalists and the industry saying like, enough is enough. Like we tried to work with you as the government 5 years ago. We got scared of the feds, all of y'all's, we all got scared of the feds. And now everything's risen to just this fever pitch of bad. And finally the government was like, oh, this is what it looks like if we just are like laissez-faire regulatory. And it was like, oh, we actually have way more in common than, you know, people like one of the farmers, he's like, why do you think I have a salmon tattooed on my arm? Do you think I want to see them all dead? And it's like, yeah, no, you're not a fish murderer. Like your goal is not to like kill the fish so your kids have no nature. So yeah, that was kind of the genesis. So I've been on this ride since 2010. You know, I would say like in this weed world and environment and law, legal, like all of this stuff for 13 years now. So like, I have a special place of anger that is like, these people in Neyland didn't show up to the party. Oh, at any point in time in the last 13 years, they didn't participate, they didn't engage, and then they have the audacity to say, I didn't feel heard. Now I'm going to throw, you know, a Molotov cocktail in because I didn't get my way. And I'm like, you're selfish.
Yeah. Really, what?
Selfish.
But I'm dying. Will people remember me? Not for good. If they do, you could have just chilled and saved a hill or something, but you chose to create a hill to die on that's dumb and hateful. Man, I'm glad that you are here to fight this and let us know and work with these farmers. It is cool to like, the Humboldt community is like cool. It never ceases to be like, oh, it's pretty amazing. And then it just reveals more and more dope people every time we go. So it's just like a special place that needs to be protected. And I think it will be protected because of people like you and the community, like true community, which is another thing I think that I don't broadcast well, but that's part of why I'm so drawn to that county, especially in Mendo a little bit. I'm just getting to know it too. It's like, there is like a, it's, and I'm a hillbilly from East Tennessee. So it's like, I miss that part of being like, we don't necessarily all like each other, but we do love each other and we will take care of each other and talk to each other and protect our way of doing this. And when it matters, we got each other's back. And I think that's just like special. And I'm always down for that, especially if it's protecting the redwoods and these and weed. And so I'll be honest, like there's two things that come together. I'm like, cool.
You're saying exactly like I, coming from Southern California originally, I knew what a gated community was. I didn't know what real community was. But I mean, when I came up here in 2006, I mean, we were at the tail end of what are known as the timber wars, which is the, you know, Redwood Summer, Daryl Cherney and Judy Berry. I mean, the like almost 20 years of fighting to protect the old growth. And so this community has this very strong activism spirit, you know, also a lot of demonstrations around aerial herbicide application. I mean, the monkey wrenching, I mean, people, this is anti-nuke activism. And so, but a lot of that activism was supported, the activism, the arts, the music, and everything was supported because people had a little grow. And so that funding, and it's like the organization that I used to work for, EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, was founded by Back to the Landers. So people always like, people that don't like EPIC were always like, oh, it's all, you know, it's all just dope grower money. And I'm like, you're right. But that
we really care about the environment as dope growers.
You know, and that was the thing. And it's like, but our people have been painted as environmental terrorists. And like, and you know, really what's happened in these last 8 years is, you know, there was a real green rush. Money was growing on trees. And a lot of people came here to extract resources. And that has been the story of Humboldt for 175 years, gold rush, timber, cattle. It's been resource extraction for almost two centuries, right? And so a lot of people came here to get rich. They came here only with money and greed in their minds. And then as legalization took effect and as regulation took effect, frankly, a lot of people have left. And while it's sad to see our community shrink, in some ways I'm like, don't let the door kick you on the way out. Like, because the people that are left here are people who genuinely want to be here. They love this plant. They love their land. They love this community. They're here for the right reasons, because it is not easy to be here. In fact, it's never been easy to be in Humboldt because we really are isolated.
It's not easy to get to. So why would it be easy to be there?
I mean, we are isolated, we're remote. It's those are the good things.
It's wonderful. Yes, everything you're saying is
delightful.
Awesome.
Absolutely delightful.
Like someone was like, why do you like Hawaii? I was like, well, they tell you when it's the most remote place on the planet. So
I mean, it was great to be here through the pandemic. All of our people were like, dude, I've been prepping for this for decades.
They were like, finally. That's why I don't have to go out. That's what I was like, too. I was like, this is great. Thank you so much for your time and letting us know exactly what is happening and why, because I would have butchered that and I would have been meaner to those old ladies. But I think they deserve it. I'm going to find out more.
It's one man, one woman. Well, it's actually, I guess, technically two men and a woman. So
three old ladies. There we go.
More or less.
Three old ladies.
More or less.
Three old birds we need to take care of. But you guys, I can't wait to hang out October 1st, Sunday, October 1st in Redway at Mateel. It's going to be me and Mike and Henry and Ben from Last Podcast and David from Great Moments in Weed History and Frank Castillo from The Peak Podcast and Mike Glazer from Weed and Grub. And then maybe some other, I don't know, possibly, but that is for sure who's going to be there. Doors open at 6. I would, you know, mill around the parking lot. I bet parking lot's going to be real fun too that day, is what I'm saying. It better be. But
wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Thank you so much.
Whatever happens between consenting adults is now legal.
In Humboldt. Amen. Amen. Thank you for your time. Have a great. We'll see you soon. We can't wait.
Bye.